Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
All right, guys, we got a great podcast coming shortly. First off, I don't think this is going to come as any surprise on what I'm about to say. Francesco Molinari's first week as a Callaway staffer led the field in strokes gained off the tee with his epic flash sub-zero driver. Oh, and he just had what he called the best putting round of his life with his Toulon Madison Stroke Lab putter. I've been using the O-Works putter I've got. I've got a Toulon one sitting over there. Been hesitant to use it, but after seeing that, I might have to at least try it out. I've been a little afraid to switch putters, but it might be time. He's also gaming in epic flash sub-zero fairway wood, Apex MB irons, Mac Daddy 4 wedges. So again, just to follow up on what was said on the most recent episode, when he said the golf ball is the best one he's ever played, I think it's fair to say he meant it. Remarkable achievement to win the first week after an equipment change. I think that speaks volumes for the quality equipment that he's using. Without any further delay, let's roll in Kevin Van Valkenburg to wrap up from Bay Hill. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast. The guys are not here tonight. They are off at a concert. So we called in the reliever, called in the righty, made the motion to the bullpen. Kevin Van Valkenburg. It's been a little while. It's been since the Ryder Cup. I think the first question people want answered is we need Gary Player's take on the Europeans taking over the leaderboard at the Arnold.
Chris, thank you. I'm so happy to be here. First of all, an exciting win for Frankie Molinari, an exciting win for Callaway. You know they're going to be moving putters off the shelves right and left. And he beat a 17-year-old man, Matthew Fitzpatrick. You've got to just be impressed. I'm not particularly pleased with his fitness. He's got a little bit of a jelly tubby like hanging over his belt, but an incredible ball striker, and I'm so happy for Frankie.
Tubby belly. Francesco Molinari awoke European golf Twitter. I hadn't heard from them actually since the last time you were on the podcast to talk about the Ryder Cup.
I think this should be my role, is to come on every now and then and just get Euro Twitter like ready to go again. They're kind of lie dormant, you know. They're just enjoying their socialized medicine and quaint lives while we wither away in the throes of late capitalism. And then now European Twitter is back.
I'm hoping that they're kind of playing a parody, but there were some questions of like, all right, so now are you guys really going to dominate the Ryder Cup for the next 5 years? And I was like, oh my God, listen, no one turns the page on the next Ryder Cup faster than I did. And I like was stunned at some of the things I was reading today, but no, yeah, obviously the whole landscape of golf has changed. That's 1 week at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, without a doubt.
Clearly, they're going to put rough all like at the Sanderson Farms next year, I'm sure, as a result of this. And it's just, you're going to see all kinds of firm and fast courses playing, you know, throughout the playoffs. That won't make the players upset at all.
It's today was the finish was not exciting, I think. But for the actual finish the finish was just way earlier than it was the end of the actual telecast. It was about 2 hours before Rory and Fitzpatrick made their way around. But it wasn't that exciting, but it was the Molinari's putt leading up into it. And the broadcast team, it was almost like they knew what was going to happen. They spent so long before that putt. And I know he was already in the lead, but they really did set it up really well. He drains it. And then Paul Azinger says there's never been a bigger moment in his career.
Do you think Azinger in that moment believed that that was true, or that he just totally forgot that, like, this is the defending Open champion?
I want to chalk it up to like getting caught up in the moment, and maybe he's referring to like specific PGA Tour career. That's a big kind of leap to make, but I know he wasn't on the broadcast team now, but your new network also broadcasted that event less than like 9 months ago, whatever it was.
At least he wasn't like, this is the biggest moment in his FedEx Cup career. He'll remember this FedEx Cup moment forever.
Oh, I mean, that putt was sick. Final round 64, gained almost 8 shots on the field Sunday. So I think, I mean, this is kind of an obvious question to ask. And, you know, luckily in the post-round interview, it was the second question that was asked. But how do you think this win affects him for next week for the Players' Championship?
Probably gives him some good confidence for the Players. You know, it's I'm sure he won't skip it now, you know? God, I don't know. I mean,
talk about the answer to the question that nobody is asking. Like, literally nobody.
Hey, we're also broadcasting this event next week, which we're really secretly, quietly trying to sell it as the fifth major after years of saying that we weren't doing that. Could you just segue quickly into that event and talk about how, like, important it is for that, for your focus next week?
Well, we're going to do plenty of player stuff, but looking back at it now, it always kind of pisses me off when the other network after somebody wins, will say, like, oh, this gets you in Augusta. And I never really noticed the difference of how they don't do that when it's on NBC. It pisses me off, though. It's like, no, like, winning a PGA Tour event is a big-ass deal to a lot of these guys.
Yeah.
Yes, going to Augusta is a big part of kind of the benefits of that, but it's just so funny to me that they transition immediately to the player. They don't even, like, you're not even allowed to mention the Masters. We'll get to the player stuff. All joking aside, I don't put any stock into the fact that there was a ton of Euros at the top of the leaderboard actually meaning anything. Do you?
Not really. I mean,
okay,
you know, Riv had, like, really good rough too, and it's not as if, like, the Euros were, like, dominating that. You know, that was a bunch of Americans and Rory were sort of in the mix of that. I mean, I think you just get weeks where I think there might be something to say, like, if you combine crisp, you know, greens that, mm-hmm. you know, and hard shots where you're hitting long irons and hard rough, that might suit, you know, it might just sort of make the bomb and gouging sort of harder to do. But I don't think that, like, one sort of event kind of really can play that trend out that much further. I mean, like, a bunch of dudes had a good week. Like, you know, it's Keith Mitchell also had a really good week. He's not exactly like a stylist who, like, you know, could sort of think his way around the European tour. He's a guy who just rips it off the tee every time. So I'm not sure those things quite hold up.
Man, I mean, so we're not saying that Keith Mitchell is the best American player in the world right now?
Clearly, Keith Mitchell should be the captain of the next Ryder Cup team, because he clearly could get it done in whatever course they're going to play in Rome, if they've even built it yet.
All right, we got almost all the questions we got were basically about Rory. So I'm ready to start talking about this. I've tried so hard to defend it. I feel like I'm bursting at the seams. Like, I feel like I'm in an infomercial, you know, where they have that, like, Flex Seal stuff where they smack it on the water leaks and everything, trying to hole up all these leaks and
I've defended Rory. All this play.
Yeah,
Rory's fixed now. You better believe it.
Well, he finished T6. Now he's not even logging the top fives anymore. He's making it even harder for me to make these arguments.
He's trending in the wrong direction, Solly. He's not. This is really disappointing.
Well, here's, as I was kind of, you know, compiling a couple notes for this evening, I started thinking, like, you know what used to be a quote-unquote knock on Rory was all the backdoor top five finishes he's had. Yeah. And now he's going the other way. Well, which is worse? Which way do people want it? You can't have it both ways. Like, it can't, like, fading into a T6 or backdooring a T6 are both just completely unacceptable results for Rory. Is that fair to say?
Yes, that's fair to say. I actually have some stats here. I came prepared.
Yes, I love it.
Thanks to Ben Colley of one of those gambling websites over there in Europe. I'm sorry that I can't remember it off the top of my head. But here is Rory in the final group. Since 2016, these are his scores, okay? 74, 69, he won that one in the Irish Open.
Nice.
68, finished second. 70 to Lee, that was in the, like, the Dubai thing. 74 to Patrick Reed. 70, Molinari beat him. 73 to JT. JT won Firestone. 74 to Tiger when Tiger won the Tour Championship. 72, the Tour Championship. 67, that was against DJ. And now 72 against Molinari. So we're looking at kind of 2 years almost of data there.
Mm-hmm.
Can we extrapolate anything for the fact that he only shot in the 60s, was it 3 out of 10 rounds there, and won one time? Like, I feel like I'm always so torn because, like, he's really one of my favorite athletes, like, of all time. He's just such a thoughtful, insightful person. But I think that we would be doing, like, the listeners or whatever, or the readers that I have a disservice if we didn't sort of talk about the fact that, like, it seems like he needs an exorcism or something. It seems like whatever he had in 14 and 15, where he could just throttle down and take over tournaments, is just missing. And I don't know what it is, and I don't know if it'll ever come back. I do know that I'm kind of tired of, like, reading the story that's essentially been written, even by me, that's like, Rory's got it figured out now.
Yeah.
Rory's, you know, he's in a great place mentally, and he's talked to Brad Faxon, or he's talked to, you know, Butch Hartman, whomever, and he's got it dialed in now. Like, until you do it, I just don't really want to hear it anymore.
You know what I think that could be working against Rory is that he's a bit too smart, and that I think when he was really young, especially going up until he turned 25, he'd won four majors by the time before he turned 26. He was a bit young and dumb. I mean, he's a smart guy. He's always been a smart guy, but didn't know his what's the word I'm looking for? Like the fact that it couldn't go his way. Like he was tricked himself mentally into thinking that this is, you know, the way it's going to be for me, and when I get in contention, I'm going to blow people away. Mm-hmm. And I think as he's matured, he just kind of has become more aware of all of the talent that is around him, and I don't know if that makes sense, but it kind of is like he doesn't seem to have that I can beat the world mentality anymore. It almost seems like his ceiling has lowered a bit. I'm not exactly sure how or why, but I mean, he's still obviously incredible, incredible, incredible at golf. And I kind of wanted to, like a serious question, like, would you feel better about his play going into the Players, of course? Would you feel better if he had one win, but like, let's sub out two of his top finishes for missed cuts? Mm-hmm. Like, would you feel better about his season?
I don't think so. Although it's interesting, he once said, I remember because I was basically following him for like a year to do a big feature about him. He said, I know that my game is going to be like win three times, miss three cuts. Like I'd rather have that than like be finishing in the top five a lot. And I wonder, like, if you read that quote to him now, what he would think. Like I wonder, I mean, you could flip it and look at it the other way and say, if he had one win, it would sort of like give him the shot of self-confidence of like, yeah, I'm still the effing man. Like I could still freaking do this. Who cares if I miss the cut, you know, at this thing, but I know I can throw darts and make putts when I need to. And I remember when we were like kids, when we were kind of learning golf, you'd hear like, whether it was, you know, Venturi or Johnny Miller talking about like guys who had scars on it, like from like missing putts over the years. And like, you know, that mental thing kind of built up over time. And what I think now is that like, we've seen like the whole entirety of Rory's career, and we've seen those sort of scars start to form. And it's like, if the narrative is always like, you can't figure out putting, and every time you stand over a 4-footer and you shove it 2 inches right, you can't help but like think, and I think this is exactly what's going on with Spieth right now, like, God, shut up. I wish people would just stop talking about this. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of mental scars that like, you know, build up over time. And how do you, especially if you're a smart person, you're pretty intellectual, and you can't just kind of like go blank or go take it to black, I think is what Azinger sort of talks about. How do you not think about all of that other shit swirling around you and just, you know, putt and just trust that it's going to go in? I mean, I think people used to say, oh, well, when Spieth can't putt like he can, he's not going to be the same player. And I used to sort of say, you know, screw that. You're so stupid. Like, it's such a dumb take. And now I find myself a little bit like, boy, I don't know. Like, did some of those scars start to build up to the point where is always going to feel that way? And even he is one of the best iron players in the whole world, is that going to linger for a long time? Or is he going to be able to find the thing that helps him kind of just make his mind go blank again?
You know, I was thinking about this today, and I don't want this to be taken too literally, but kind of what you're just saying is something that somebody like Francesco Molinari does not have to deal with, in that, and I don't mean this literally, but no one cares how Francesco Molinari plays. Like, when he plays great, like, that's wonderful, and people celebrate, he's an incredible player, but if he plays poorly, like, no, he doesn't have to answer questions about it. Mm-hmm. It's not a worry. Nobody's panicking. There's no expectations, you know, on him. There's no one he's got to deliver for. He doesn't have to think about, like, what will people say about me if I don't close this out? And that's something that, you know, guys like Rory and Spieth all have to deal with at a totally different level. And I have no possible idea of understanding how that affects your game at the top level, but I would have to think that when it's not going great, when it's not going your absolute best, it has to be a detriment to you.
Totally. I used to say that about Brooks Koepka. Like, he doesn't know how good he has it, like, not having to answer interview questions after shooting a 71. And for whatever you feel about Tiger, like, he, for the entirety of his career, essentially 99.3% of the time, stood up there after every round and answered questions about every little, like, putt that wiggled left or right. Like, he he knew that like that was kind of his role and his part of the game. And like you've seen already, like in Rory and Spieth's career, where they didn't love that fact. Like, you know, Jordan shoots 74 or 75 at the US Open and he's furious and he doesn't want to talk to the press or whatever. Like, that's just part of the burden. And that's why I was sort of joked about Koepka, is like, you know, when he was complaining about it, I was like, all right, every major that I'm at, I'm going to go up to him no matter what he shoots and ask him, hey, what did you think about today? Whatever. Because if you're that good of a player, that's part of the burden of it. And then you realize how, what a kind of like devil's bargain that is. It might give you a little bit more attention, but oh my God, every time it doesn't go great, like you still have to stand up and talk about it. And that can be, it's like a mental cycle of misery.
And again, that kind of goes back to Tiger ruining things for us, is Tiger has dealt with that for every round for 20 years and obviously handled it better than maybe anybody in history. But that's like a superhuman level of dealing with it. And, you know, as much as his longevity hasn't lasted on a major championship level, the fact that he has, you know, he's come back and won it in his 40s and had this super long career with some, obviously some big gaps in it with some injuries, it says a lot. I mean, Rory has not been able to, he never reached full Tiger, you know, expectations or, you know, that kind of play, which we weren't really counting on him to, but he hasn't even been able to maintain the top level that he's reached at. So, again, Tiger ruined everything for us. I think that contributes so much to this sports talk radio culture of
totally
this winning thing being so, so important. And we got a couple good questions about Jared Gouge asked if Rory's recent superb form encourages you going into the Masters, or his inability to close these tournaments, have you more concern for his chances to complete the career slam? I don't know. I don't want to read too much into that, but I go back to like playing really well. Honestly, for Rory's sake, like winning a bunch leading into the Masters would be the opposite of what he wants. I'm sure he's trying to win these tournaments, but from he always talks about how he wants it quiet. He wants it quiet going into the Masters. If he wins two events beforehand, it's not going to be quiet going into it.
No, the expectations would be absurd. You know, what I was thinking actually is this is kind of a little media insider thing, but you know, so many of the guys at Augusta every year, they have to do like the Tuesday press conference where they go in and they sort of get questions from everybody for, you know, a half an hour or whatever. And it's, you know, it's convenient for the press to sort of all have that and have a transcript of it. If I could fire Rory this year, I'd be like, you know what? I'm just, if you want to talk to me, you can meet me after my practice round under the big tree, like out by the Miranda, but I'm not doing any presser this year. Like I've no obligation for it. I'm not a defending champion. Like there's no reason why I shouldn't be able to say no to that. Just, I want to keep it sort of casual and keep it light this year. And so I'm happy to talk to you guys, but I'm not going to sit there and bare my soul and tell you like, yeah, I've, you know, someone pointed this out to me years ago. And if you look back at the transcripts, it's true. Every year that he comes to Augusta, he has some sort of like, you know, and this is especially true in the last 4 years, but ever since he sort of blew it in 10 or whatever it was, 11, he has some sort of like new mentality of like, yeah, you know, I've been like grinding over it so hard this year. Or yeah, you know, actually I've not taken it that serious this year. Oh yeah. Like, I've got a mental coach. Yeah, I've been really sort of working on my putting. Yeah, I came here 10 times with my dad. Yeah, I didn't visit the course at all. And it's like, dude, like, you're already down the weird rabbit hole of this. Like, you can't keep sort of just like trying 100 different things. Just don't even talk about it anymore. I know as a person in the media that seems like absurd for me to say, but for his sake, I think it'd be like, yeah, dude, it's like, I'm just not going there. I don't care if I'm, that's how I've always been, but now I'm not going to do it because it's not helping me.
And it's not like he got you go into the Masters with like a 50% chance of winning. Tiger at his absolute best never went in with like an actual better than 25% chance of winning it. I know the odds state differently because that's heavily influenced by how much people bet on you and whatnot. But like if you went straight by data, like Rory's never showed up with a greater than 10% chance of winning the Masters. So like imagine I don't know what the comparison to that would be, but you can't change up your approach to it. And I know he probably feels like he hasn't played his best possible golf there, which, you know, if that means you have to change your approach to it, I support that. But just because you didn't win doesn't mean you have to change everything you do about it. You may be able to take the same approach, same kind of repeatable approach, and learn and build off that and you know, learn, you know, the state of your game. And I mean, it's all variables because you can take the same approach 1 year and be totally lost coming in the next year following that same approach. But that's where I think like two separate things. One, you kind of busted what I was getting ready to say by citing all those bad scores in the final round that he's had. Yeah. But like he walked into today, like when he woke up today, he had a per data golf He had a 25% chance of winning the golf tournament today. Mm-hmm. And I think people like look at the final pairing and look at, he wasn't even in the lead going into it. But, you know, when you have that many people up there and it's only a one shot exchange, people think that just the top player is going to run past people. But and again, that percentage factors in his ability, the field he's going up against, the golf course, all that stuff. Yeah. And it was a 1 in 4 chance that he would win today. And I know he didn't play great. But I think that's two separate things. Like if he'd have shot 69 today, shot 300, he still wouldn't have even made a playoff. So
yeah, he just excites us. He makes us think that like when you look on the graphics and he's 50 yards past Matthew Fitzpatrick.
I know.
And Fitzpatrick occasionally is still hitting it inside of him. You're just like, why aren't you converting more of these things? And that's why like all of this conversation is about Rory, not Molinari, not Fitzpatrick, not Rafa Cabrera. It's just like, it seems like he should be able to, he has the skills to convert more of these things. And that's why the potential for him was always so high. Like everyone just thought like, oh my God, like how is this 5'9" kid out here just ripping the ball like in and making, hitting the kind of like towering shots that Tiger could hit. Well, why can't he do the other part? And the truth is that Tiger was a freaking superhuman.
Yeah.
And so like, yeah, like you, Rory might be able to do some of the things that Tiger could do, but that's not what made Tiger great. Like Tiger was great because he could convert all that kind of stuff. And so I think our expectations have always been a little bit out of whack, but you know, I think I would still, Rory would still be amongst the five players or so that I would say was most likely to win the Masters. The thing about, I think we've even talked about this probably literally on this podcast before, is he doesn't need to putt that great to win the Masters. Like everyone, like putting is sort of neutralized there because it's so freaking hard. And so if he played fairly safe and well and hit to the middle of every one of those greens and birdied all the par fives and threw an eagle in there and you know, limited its bogeys, he'd be right in it. And all you got to do to really be, you know, to win it is to be in it come Saturday afternoon and get hot at the right moment. And he's had some rounds where he's kind of gotten hot in the right moment. It's just, he doesn't have to like figure out putting before the Masters. He just has to kind of get the combination of luck and not making dumb mistakes. Like a few years ago when he was like left in the trees at 11, was like, let me hit a hard hook around the corner here, see if I can bounce it off the mound into the middle of 11 green. That's probably not a particularly smart play.
I love it, though. Listen, I'm all in.
I can't resist in my own game, but like happy to lecture Rory.
I think an important distinction that you just made there, too, is we're not comparing Rory to Tiger, but the way that, you know, Rory coming after Tiger just screwed up our curve for what we expect in somebody. You know, like even if you're not going to be Tiger, we need you to be this. And it's right now, I would say it's, I think he would even agree, he's fallen short of what he thinks his full potential is. So per Data Golf, he is number one on the Data Golf Trend Index, which indicates how many strokes better or worse a player has performed in relation to the field in their last 20 rounds. So as much as you know, as much as the results haven't totally followed, he is trending, they would say. Keith Buckout asked, "Will one of you guys let Ashley Bongiovanni know if that Rory is deceased? Because the poor girl will be heartbroken, and she deserves to know." That one was a shining moment in going through the Twitter replies today. So thank you for that.
Yeah, someday I feel like there should be like, you know how Sports Illustrated does that poster where it's like they cut out a little piece of every college basketball player, every NCAA thing. There should be like a Knowing Up Origins poster that has like, you know, like Panther Mike and Giovanni and, you know, KBB doing the gay player impression. It's all part of the origin stories.
We still plan to do a podcast, hopefully this week, on just all the stupid, dumb inside jokes that we have over the years, just to catch anyone up. If you're ever lost, is why we call Joost Louten Uncle Juiced. Like we're going to explain all that. So I forgot to mention at the top, Matthew Fitzpatrick gets 0 FedEx Cup points for today since he's not a PGA Tour member. So that's pretty cool. On the big cat, on the note of the big cat, was him missing this week a big deal to you?
I thought it was a little strange. Why would, I don't know. Obviously he kind of decided I want to play enough tournaments this year or whatever to get into the playoffs. I don't even know why that really matters, but I would think that someone at the PGA Tour is probably like begging him, like, please don't just play like 10 tournaments this year. Like, please, you know, be here for the long haul. But, you know, if his neck is really just kind of sore and he just feels like he can't do it. It was weird that I think he didn't talk to the press the last 2 days in Mexico and then kind of pulled out of this. It just...
It's the Golf TV era.
Yeah, that to me is... I'm going to switch... I'm going to completely flip-flop in one thing where I was saying Rory shouldn't reveal as much to himself and then complain that Tiger's only talking to his, like, state-sponsored media, this in-house media thing. I don't know. I mean, we'll see how he looks this week, I suppose. But what is him playing this week? What does he have to prove? Like, he really need to rack up a ninth win here at the Ballmer? You know, is he... really feel like he needs to. I mean, it was maybe different when he was living in Orlando. It was like, as I was talking to Justine Reed at one point on walking around the rounds, and she was like, I was like, oh, that putt is so hard on 18. And she was like, yeah, it's given, but Tiger made it all the time because he lived like 2 blocks away. He could see the course all the time. I was like, oh,
he just goes out in the dark and reads that putt.
It was a pretty sweet comment. I just, it was like, yeah, I bet Tiger totally sneaks out here late at night and just practices that putt, throwing in the hat. And stuff.
I actually heard from a very credible source that Tiger does not even like Bay Hill. Yeah, I know that sounds absolutely insane, but he doesn't even like the golf course. You know, I actually wrote down that, like, I've actually changed my mind since I wrote this down, that I thought him missing this event was a big deal. Since he's won it like 75 times and he skips the Honda because he wanted to play this one. And I look back at it and I'm like, honestly, what does like winning this event or doing well in this event do for him? If he's feeling slightly less than healthy, assuming he's playing this week, he just wanted to be a little bit better shape for the players. He's going to, you know, put the clubs up or get back on the grind session and try to peak for Augusta. Like, it really doesn't matter for him, this event. I know he's won it, and I know it used to be a hometown event for him, but I've changed my mind on it. I don't think it was a big deal that he missed. So
if there was no such thing as like the FedEx Cup playoffs and you just could play whatever you wanted and there was no like minimum tour requirement, I really wonder how often we would see Tiger play every year. I mean, the whole like, well, I got to get reps and tournament speed and all that stuff. But like, you know, to be honestly, like if you're a player like Tiger and you're like exempt in like 80 different ways and you never have, you could get a sponsored invite into literally anything you wanted. Like, what would make you really want to play like some of the regular sort of stuff? You know, like there's plenty of NFL players who basically like, I'm sitting out the first 4 weeks of the season because that's not what matters. Mm. And it's a little bit surprises me that he isn't more like that. And that's kind of probably segues a little bit into like Phil saying like, what is the point of me playing the players other than like the pressure internally from the tour to say like, you need to play our biggest event? Like, it's Phil saying, I don't want to like develop any dumb bad habits of like, you know, before I go to Augusta, because that's what really matters to me. I've won the players. It's not going to do anything for my legacy. Why would I want to do this like again and screw myself up in some way?
It might if it gets shifted to a major, which we're going to get to here in a second. what do we kind of feel about where this event stands in the game? I don't know. In general, it's a conversation every year of like, you know, do enough players show up to support this, to support Mr. Palmer? Has anything changed in the way you view it over the last few years?
Not really. I think that it's still, you know, a sort of, I guess, event held in high regard. I mean, I all of that kind of like, what tier is this event and how important is this event? Like, all of that's kind of like a made up thing in our heads, right? I mean, does it really matter, you know, as long as the event still exists? I mean, you know, it's not a WGC, it's not a major, it's not, you know, a playoff event. There are all these categories now that we're sort of shuffling this stuff into. Does it really matter, like, if it's not seen as quite the having the sort of prestige that it once did? I don't know. I mean, winning it is a big deal. The purse is a big deal. And it's a hard course to win. It's not like any sort of, you know, knucklehead can come out here and just sort of steal one. So I think I'm okay with where it is. I mean, I do think a little bit that it's hard maybe for our generation of golf fans to really grasp just how important Palmer was to like the building of the actual PGA Tour and like the sort of, you know, barnstorming of America that these guys did basically to kind of, you know, build up sponsors and the reason why all these tournaments exist and why they're all, you know, actually like nonprofits so that they can sort of funnel money in a different way. Like, you can kind of tie a lot of that into Palmer and the kind of love of corporate America of him and why the tour exists the way it does. And so I think it's important for if you're someone who makes a shit ton of money on the tour to understand that Arnold Palmer was a huge part of your ability to live a really good life. And I often wish, in the covering the NFL, that the NFL players had a greater appreciation for the guys who, you know, had to work construction in the off season so that they could, you know, still like make a living as football players. And they formed unions that were able to sort of get collective bargaining, be part of it. And that's, you know, you ought to maybe throw some money in for their healthcare in the long run. So it's the same kind of thing. Like, if you value your standard of living now, you ought to pay some homage to the people who made it possible in the past.
Yeah. How many, two questions here. How many misters are there in the game of golf? And how many also are currently playing in this generation, but haven't gotten old enough yet that they'll be called Mister?
Oh my gosh.
Like, is Tiger going to go by Mr. Woods in his later years?
No way. Like, can you even imagine, like, what are people really going to show up to, like, you know, are Rory's kids going to show up to Riv and be like, well, Mr. Woods here is a really gracious host, you know, and, I really hope he can still break Jack's record. You know, he's 61, but you never know. Mr. Mickelson, will Phil Mickelson ever be like a Mr.? I think
I could see that. Who was the first, we were talking about this today a little bit in the Kill House, who was the first Mr. of golf? Was it Mr. Jones?
I think it's Bobby Jones.
Okay.
Yeah. No, nobody was like Mr. Old Tom Morris. I mean, there was a reason why there's a young and an old in front of their names. But can Euros be Misters? There seems like more of Sir.
Sir, yeah.
Do people go up to Faldo and are like, Sir Nick?
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure they do. Absolutely. Except for, unless you're the drunk guys that we saw in at the 2006 Memorial right at a putting green, just yelling, Hey Faldo, come over here. The twist being, it was actually Nick Price that was putting. Nick Price actually, Price turned around. I was like, dude, I'm Nick Price. Like, I'm not Faldo.
I was always taught in journalism that you shouldn't address like a coach as a coach. Like, you should just say their name. Like, so when I cover the Ravens, I used to just say, you know, hey, John, to John Harbaugh, like, do you have a sec? Because, and you slip up sometimes because coach is just sort of a natural thing, but like, it gives them sort of an elevated sense of power that if you're trying to look at it from the perspective of like, hey, you have your job and I have mine, we're essentially equals, then you're ceding that power immediately by saying, hey, coach, you know, because he's not my coach or whatever. And so I don't know. I mean, golf has a sort of a weird, like, you know, elevated, like, gentlemanliness to it. And so I don't think I would go, hey, Jack, you know, if I saw Jack Nicklaus.
So you're saying if Jack ever comes on this podcast, I could just greet him with a, yo, Jay Money, what's good?
Hello, hi, Chris. That's great to be here. Well, that's not good. I laid up a lot during my career, and I really thought it paid off dividends. Arnie obviously did differently. So, you know, so I have the majors that I knew, and he had the ones he did.
Could you do all of the big three? That's two out of three of the big three that you got.
Oh, God, I've never even thought about how to do Arnold Palmer.
Yeah, I'm not going to make you do that on the spot. One last thing on Bay Hill, and it kind of transitions into the next topic I want to discuss. But I think they got a pretty raw deal out of the new schedule, all these kind of crammed events. In that regard, one, this is kind of has that elevated status. It's got the three-year exemption on tour instead of two. It's got the money. It's got the same kind of status as the Memorial does. Mm-hmm. Isn't it kind of a dick move to be showing guys warming up and arriving at TPC during the Sunday of an actual golf tournament, an actual event?
100%. Like, what? Who cares? Like, I got to see, like, who was it that they were showing? It was something absurd. I think that we were texting about this. Like, who? Like, I care about, you know, somebody going through their warm up routine on the range at Sawgrass.
It's like, I can't. It's so unbelievably forced. Like, imagine caring about the players arriving at TPC. Like, I honestly wouldn't watch like footage of like them arriving to Augusta. Why the hell would I actually care about them arriving at TPC? And like, I know, again, this it sounds like a dumb thing to focus on or care about, but like, people dedicated resources, time, money, all that goes into setting up video and like all the reasons that people say so much can't happen with a broadcast. Like, think about, this is what they're willing to do. They're willing to send, I know it's a home game, but they're sending camera crews out there to TPC. You got to pay these people to do that and pay to run the equipment and like submit all these, you know, the transmissions for this it's not even tournament week yet. What the hell is going on?
Here they come, driving down the vaunted Pondra Vedra Boulevard.
pulling in past the fountains. There's the Chili's in Jacksonville on the onto the left. Some of the players will have a meal throughout the week. What a majestic sight it is.
Like, how many times have you seen them pull down PGA Tour Boulevard? Just like Magnolia Lane. I know we're gonna, like, I know it's fun to make fun of the players now. Like, it sucks because it is like a really great tournament. I'm looking forward to going this week, and but I'm glad it's back in March. But oh my God, this being jammed down your throat is, again, it's so representative of everything we talk about and how the hardcore golf fan, which is most of the listeners of this podcast, are just so ostracized by absolutely everything and just need to be spoon fed everything. And like, again, we kind of touched on it, but like, no mentions of the Masters at all on the telecast today, which is without one single doubt a directive from the tour. And you might say that doesn't matter, and it might actually not, but it's not how anyone in the real world talks. And that just means you're getting spoon-fed. Like, we all get excited about the Masters. No one truly gets excited for the players other than the tour.
Yeah.
Like, I'm looking forward to it, but I'm not truly excited about it.
I just don't – I mean, maybe this is why people go to school for marketing and they figure out how to do this stuff, and maybe this is why, like, some of it still feels forced, is because you can't learn this kind of shit in school. But, like, you can't make something, like, happen unless it happens organically.
Right.
Like, if the players hasn't become, you know, what you most want it to be by now, it's probably not going to happen. It's just – you can't keep sort of pretending, like – oh, you know, we're sort of, we're not really trying to make it a major while you're hiring an orchestra to like have its own theme song, and you're sneaking it into the graphics and be like, and you have like guys on the Golf Channel being like, well, you know, this is just a really great lead into the five majors. You know, it's like, there are not five majors.
Oh,
like,
my God. It's what did you make of the theme song and the rollout? First of all, we can definitely declare that the old joke of oh my God, is that so and so's music? That's officially dead because the player's Twitter account used that. And that was one of my favorite go tos too. It's a few years old, but I officially has to go into retirement.
Well, eventually you either, you know, you live long enough to be the hero, or you live long enough to see your own jokes turned back at you by inferior comedians.
I can't decide if it was brilliant, because now they're clearly going to jam this theme song down our throats. I mean, what other reason would you have for rolling it out and everything they've done for it? But now I do actually notice the theme song now when they go. Well, first of all, it's like every 20 minutes for commercials in today's broadcast. But yeah, I can't wait to see how much they're going to. They might, instead of, like, you know, the announcers usually talking over player caddy combos, they might play the theme song over some of the conversations on the ground this week.
I mean, how much did that cost? It had to, you know, hiring all those, like, musicians had to cost $100,000-some. Like, you're telling me that
yeah. I mean, it is, but, like, that is a kind of a normal thing to do, right? I mean, like, every kind of major, like, Sunday Night Football's got a theme. Like, I'm sure a lot of money goes into that. I actually don't have that much of a problem with it. It's just the fact that it's, like, here's what it is. Here, instead of it just being, like, again, it's very representative of the tournament. Instead of just letting it be what it is and just playing the theme song for it, it's like, all right, let's. But again, I also feel like it's working.
Everything is content.
But I think it's working because we're talking about it, and now people are going to notice it. So, all right, so what the hell is going on with all of this major stuff? You touched on it just now. I didn't even want to give like credence to it because I feel like it's like the almost in my lifetime, like one of the oldest golf debates ever. It's like, is the Players the next major?
Right.
How is this gaining steam? How is this like is this an actual thing? Are we seriously talking about this?
I don't know. My feeling is like, if we do want to have a discussion about this, fine. But there's no like grandfathering in of old majors.
Without one single doubt.
If you say to like if Monahan got on the mic on Monday and was like, we've decided that this is a major, it's the deepest field in golf, and we will consider it a major going forward. It gets a 10-year exemption on tour and blah, blah, blah. Then like, what would there be to stop him? First of all, like, the majors is a made up thing anyway.
I
like,
know.
There's no like governing body that oversees and says, no, you're wrong. So that would be such a power move by Monahan if he did it. But like, I don't know. Like, what? There's no like saying, well, then Ricky has a major now. Nope.
No.
Like, it starts now. Like, that's what you have to do in that sense. There's no like going back and saying, well, Jack now has three more and Tiger has two more. Like, nope, like it starts now. Like at some point, the U.S. Amateur was no longer a major, and so like we didn't take Bobby Jones's away. We just said like going forward, you don't get counts for a major this, but at the time that was a major, so you get credit. Bobby Jones gets to keep the British Amateur and the U.S. Amateur as part of his major total. So that's where I think this debate is a little bit silly. Like, does Craig Perks as a major? No, dummy. Craig Perks does not have a fucking major.
What about Craig? What about Fred Funk? Are you kidding me?
All right, Fred could get half a major.
We did get a question from Brad Burling. He said, is there a statute of limitations? Like, can we go back a certain amount of years and give people majors for it? I think the burden on Brooks Koepka has never been heavier than it is this week. We will know whether or not it's a major if he decides to try this week.
All he needs to do is get really pissed off about his tee time or whatever, and no one interviews him, and all of a sudden he's going to totally like show up on Sunday, win this major.
If Angel Cabrera shows up and wins this thing, done deal. Jay, you can have your major. Like it's all yours. All right, it is the fifth major. It could count for two majors for all I care. If that's the case,
I still think I'd really like. It would be such a power move if like Tiger was like, well, I consider this a major, so I therefore have 15. Because you know that it would ignite this huge debate, and all these people would be like, I think Tiger's right. I think it does count as a major. The field is way deeper than Nicholas says. So Tiger has 15 majors now. Like the major drought is over. And what would there be to stop him? Who would be like, no, there's no one to appeal to. The sports writers are the ones who've made this shit up anyway. So like, if Tiger wants to call me up and be like, Kev, you support me? If I say the player's a major, I'll be like, yeah, Tiger, that's good. Give me a round at Blue Jack National. We'll do that.
Who says the media's been compromised in this era? Tiger is the one guy that I think could shift it, but like this is taking like embrace debate just too far. I feel like it's just debate for the sake of debating it. Totally. And I get that it's a really strong field and it's an event that players do take more seriously than a regular PGA Tour stop, but man, I don't mean to be a curmudgeon about it, but like I like my majors the way they are. And I get that the majors have changed over history, and I'm not like the most versed in why they've changed, but correct me if I'm wrong, the reasons for why it changes is because of like true different eras in golf. Like post World War II is a different era in the game of golf, and like the PGA, I don't know the full history, but talking the PGA between going match play to stroke play and all that, but this doesn't feel like a new era of golf, like or a reason, like we're not at a stopping point of like, you know, oh, we have to make a fifth major or else the game is gonna die. Like I don't know what that really does. So I agree it's kind of arbitrary what's a major and what's not, but like I don't see a reason to change that.
Yeah, I just like that for 60 years or whatever it's been since, I mean, the Masters started in 35 or 34 or whatever, so like, you know, I guess it's like 70 years that there you get four chances every year, and that's it. And if you throw a fifth into that, like I think it sort of it waters it down a little bit to me. Like I want there to be four chances. There's four chances in tennis, there's four chances in golf. If you go blank in a year, then you got to wait the whole calendar year to come back. And that's what makes the Masters so exciting and so fun, is that we've been sitting around and waiting since the last major for 8 months. And now, like, that's why the Masters is the hardest one to get in the sort of impregnable quadrilateral, as they say, that you have to think about it for the longest time. You got 2 weeks between the US Open and the British, and no one cares about the PGA, but you have to think about the Masters for 8 freaking months if you don't win it.
Yeah.
And that's why I want it to stay where it is.
That's a really good point. And no one loves like a really strong flex more than Augusta does. Like could they flex on the tour and be like, you're not doing that? Like what could they threaten them with, or like I'm just curious like how that would work. But I think they would literally say, well, you know, you're not doing this, but how could they actually stop them?
It's kind of like the political primaries where like New Hampshire and Iowa basically say, we're the first two primaries. And if you think you're going to move a primary ahead of us, you're dead wrong.
No, like, it's not happening. We'll move it up a year if we have to.
The Masters is now contested in January.
What do you make of Phil's weird flex of going to the event before deciding if he's actually going to play, or going to the course today to see if he's actually going to play it?
I think this is another example of Phil being kind of like bored with life and just needing to create drama to keep himself interested. Like, you know, well, there'll probably be like some helicopter thing, you know, where he's got to fly from this to that. And, you know, can he He's got a corporate commitment on Tuesday, and so he's to fly a helicopter in and get it to his tee time. Something like he just needs that little edge. It's like the gambler who's bored, and he's like, "All right, let's it's the guys and dolls thing. Let's bet on cockroaches racing because there's horse racing isn't as fun anymore." So that's the flip fill. It's like, maybe I'll play. And then if by some by hook or crook, if he wins. He's like, oh, yeah, like I just, I really wasn't sure I was going to play here, wasn't really feeling it. And then all of a sudden, things just click for me, but now it's like he's going to play and he probably won't do that well because it's just not a course that fits him really well. And if he wants to skip it, fine. Like, I'm sure the 126th player who's on the list would love to be in.
There's like 80 reasons why the Players isn't a major. One of them is the fact that Phil might skip it. Although he did skip the US Open at Erin Hills. But
that's so weird. Remember, didn't some guys skip the PGA too? Like, did Adam Scott skip the PGA? Like, Lee Westwood skip the PGA. It's not like unheard of to skip like the thing like
but
this. But
you know how you know it's really not a major? Is it was 95 degrees last year and he showed up in a long sleeve shirt just to flex his new sponsor and he did not care about the golf tournament at all. And you know how you also know it's not a major? That we keep getting emails confirming players for this event. It's like, okay, guys, we know. And they ran a promo. Again, going back to them kind of screwing over Bay Hill, they ran a promo for the Players with Tiger featured, like as the guy on the. And I mean, I know he's committed to the event and hasn't withdrawn, but like he didn't play this week because of an injury. Like he could withdraw, he could technically withdraw from the Players. From everything we've heard, he is going to play, but like he's not even for sure a go. He skipped the Bay Hill tournament, and they're like promoting him for the next week. That just also made me. I have no ties to Bay Hill that would make me this unreasonably upset, but it somehow did. So
he must have like whispered to them behind the scenes or something. Like I guess it would be a pretty like enormous gaffe if he was like. Oh yeah, definitely not playing the Players, and they were just like, "All right, promote Tiger anyway. We need this man."
I think the tour went full. What's that guy's name from the Firefest documentary? Andy, the guy that was willing to do. I think they went to Tiger. It's like, what do we have to do to get you to play the Players?
Make this happen.
And I went in there fully prepared. I know we're supposed to wait till after the Players to start thinking about Augusta, which I actually think is kind of fair. And I try to wait as long as possible. But today was actually the first that I really started to think of it. I don't know what that doesn't mean anything in particular, but now it's like starting to get into that time frame where it's time to get your game figured out. And I know Jordan Spieth wasn't playing this week, but he has had literally zero good finishes leading up into it. And I think this is the time frame when it's time to stop asking the question, like, should we be worried about somebody? Like, if they're not playing well to this point, then we should be worried about them. If they are playing well, then that's obviously a good sign. So, but this is getting to that time period where it's time to start thinking about it. So, got a few Twitter questions for you.
Okay.
Brad Bachman is asking, what does Gary Player think of Fitzpatrick's ability to read a putt while doing a plank? And could Gary give his opinion on what could happen if Kiradek adds this to his repertoire heading into Augusta?
First of all, I'm very impressed that Matthew Fitzpatrick was able to fit in his putting routine in the midst of preparatory school, because it's clearly is. I think I peg him as being about a sixth year at Hogwarts this year, and he's a fabulous young man, but I'm not sure he shaves more than twice a week.
Well, what would happen if Kiradek tried this at Augusta?
Oh, dear God. I mean, first of all, there's a reason that they have a... The heating system underneath the grounds, so it says if his Kiradek's belly sweat gets on the greens, they can dry it out right quickly.
Kiradek's belly sweat. Oh man, I wasn't expecting you to pull that one out.
I don't know where that came from either.
Well, and speaking of the Masters, Mr. Player, do you have any comments about it? We heard a story recently about your son allegedly selling fake tickets to the Masters last year. What do you have anything to say about that?
Oh, Sully, I'm so glad you asked. I'm just happy to clear this up. People should read the fine print. The contract stated there was clearly a certain level of physical fitness required. How can you complain you didn't get your master's experience when you were too fat to fit in the false bottom of a large laundry bin we planned to drive through the service entrance? Listen, when I first played the British Open at St. Andrews, I slept on the beach the night before. I had the heart of a champion. How can you say you want to go to the Masters and then say you won't help dig a tunnel from the basement of the Publix across the street that goes under Berkman's Road and leads to a trapdoor in Clifford Roberts's cottage. It's a disgrace. My young man provided all the ways to get in, and people just complained.
No idea what the hell just happened. What is this story about the alleged fake tickets?
I guess his son like sold a bunch of like passes to the Masters. It was like, oh, I'm running this sort of like essentially like Fire Festival, whatever that Fire Festival guy's name is. He was selling tickets to like Knicks games. So this is like a similar kind of deal. It's like Gary Player's son did like this, like, hey, you get a weekend with, you know, at the Masters and you get to meet Gary Player and all this stuff. And then these people like showed up in Augusta and like Gary Player's son was nowhere to be found. And like he basically just kept their money. Oh, this is what's being alleged in the lawsuit against him. And he got charged with like a felony for the thing. And I didn't see anywhere where Gary commented on it. So I just took the liberty of making up a story.
You heard it here. Breaking, must credit NLU podcast for the first official quote. I actually don't know the answer to this. I don't know if you will either, but Kyle Jensen asked, why the broadcast doesn't ever touch on equipment? It was a huge win for Molinari with new equipment in the bag, and he wished the broadcast would touch on it if it's compelling to the tournament, which it was this week.
Yeah,
I assume it's like it would just really muddy the waters if, you know, as far as equipment companies getting their names mentioned on the air, if you could like pay announcers to mention on the air and stuff. Is that a safe assumption? I actually don't know the technical rule or if they all have an agreement with each other not to do it. Do you have any insight on that?
I would bet that essentially like that the, like say NBC is, wants to say like, look, if you want your name mentioned on the broadcast, you're going to pay for that. You're going to buy commercial money. Cause we're not just going to like get around. Like we have, cause if so let's say that, you know, they were really like crowing about Callaway stuff, you know, which Molinari, you know, is using, and like this this new Stroke Lab putter that he's got, that's a Toulon whatever Stroke Lab putter, and he made like 150 foot of putts, whatever. We'll say that they were just talking about that like crazy, and Titleist is like, wait a minute, why are we paying like millions of dollars to have Scotty Cameron ads on this if you're just talking about Callaway putters, whatever? We're just gonna basically like pay Francisco Molinari that money. And we're not giving any of that money to NBC because that's, you know, that can be like Viagra ads or retirement commercials or like fucking Workday software or whatever. So but I think that's probably.
But if you're Jim Nance and you would, hey, if you would like me to voice over your Titleist commercials, I could do that as well. Though that's clearly where the line gets drawn.
It's probably an informal thing, but like obviously it's like a guy. It seems like there was some, when a guy doesn't play well with new equipment, they certainly talk about it, right? Like, you know, when the guy makes a switch and it's like a huge deal that they were like, oh, he's really having trouble adjusting in these new Titleist irons or these new Nike driver. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just because he's not like a marquee sort of player, just being a foreigner and stuff, that they're kind of weren't kind of really going to harp on it as much. But it does seem like it's a deal, right?
Yeah. I did forget to ask you, did you listen to the new Rory McIlroy podcast?
I did not.
Okay.
I was unclear at first if it was behind a paywall, and there's only so many things I will pay paywall. I guess it's free, but I used to watch a TRL a lot in like high school, and I feel like Carson Daly seems like a good guy, but I've kind of grown out of that. I'm not really sure what he offers to the golfing world in terms of expertise for interviewing Rory, but
so riddle me this.
Yeah,
if you are creating something called Golf Pass and you are the golf channel, is your strategy to bring a bunch of Carson Daly fans into the game? Like are people craving, are the Carson Daly fans craving so much more Carson that they're going to pick up a new sport and tune into and pay for the content? I'm absolutely befuddled. This is golf getting in its way again. I listen to it and I think Rory is as brilliant as ever. And I just want to hear him talk, and I could do it every week and every month or wherever they're going to do it. And honestly, Carson Daly might be getting paid per interruption, because it was just like, People love to make the joke of people getting paid by the word, and it was by interruption. And as a podcast host, it drives me absolutely nuts. And it's first episode, and people, you know, that is, I wouldn't want to be judged on our first episode. And, you know, there's a lot of chance for evolving, but I'm just like, man, this is about.
Chris Daly's been doing this for 20 years, though. Like, he's been interviewing people for 20 years. This is not like. This is his first tango in the game.
Yeah, and I'm like, it was quite frustrating to me. And if that's kind of, you know, Rory talked about that being like his way he's going to do media now. And I'm like, man, I hope that's just disappointing. You know, it's especially if a lot of that stuff is going to be behind a paywall. I don't really still quite understand how the podcast is going to work, but the people.
I mean, what makes me mad is like, Rory's got more money than he could ever spend in a lifetime, ever. So someone has convinced him in this sense, like, hey, you should do this podcast with Carson Daly because we could sell it and we could get, you know, you can make $10 million with Golf Channel as part of this, whatever. And Rory's probably like, oh, okay, yeah, sure. You know, I guess. I mean, I don't know. What does another $10 million mean to me? You know, and maybe it's the sense of like he would rather just control the content in the sense of like, well, I don't want to be asked any question that I'm uncomfortable with. And so we're going to have these kind of things where it's essentially like sponsored content and, you know, go forward. Great. And but that's fine, I guess. But it's a bummer to me because it sort of robs the game of its, you know, one of its most authentic voices. And I'm sure someone out there is going to say, oh, you're just mad because you're not going to do the NLU podcast anymore. Like, well, I don't know that that's true. He might, but
I'm
still,
a little butthurt about that, but and you're the one that told him not to talk to the media ahead of Augusta. So I don't know what you're getting out of there, but he did touch on it, how, the appeal of doing things on a podcast, which I think is why he's done this podcast in the past and done others, and why a lot of players continue to do it. It's like people hear the conversation, they hear the context, and it's not like headlines being made about what happened and things kind of taken out of context and made, you know, people choosing 20% of what he said to make it sound more appealing. I totally subscribe to that. And like, if he had, honestly, if he had his own podcast and there was somebody there that just like facilitated the conversation, I would listen to it. That'd be the first thing I would download. So, it's just a little bit kind of, it harps back to just what is representative of golf problems in general, of like trying to be something it's not. I mean, I just can't imagine like that this is going to draw more people into it because Carson Daly's co-hosting it. But
that's just it's such a marketing scam. It's someone who's saying this will bring younger listeners in to whatever. And it's like, no, like even like if Niall Horan was hosting the podcast, that would make more sense if from a perspective of like, we're trying to bring new listeners in or whatever. Cause all the New Direction people would like, and Dingwood might download it for like just to juice the views.
Isn't it Old Direction? Wait,
did I say Old Direction?
No, I said, it is New Direction. Sorry, I thought it was Old Direction. You said new. Sorry, I don't know.
God, so I get with it.
Yeah, see, right? Maybe this would make me a New Direction fan. I actually do agree with you. Like, they're buddies, and like that would be kind of more interesting than, I don't know if they had a previous relationship. But again, it might improve, but I don't know if it goes behind a paywall at some point or whatnot, but kind of a tough spot. It's hard to critique other podcasts. It's kind of you no matter what, you're going to come off a little bit butthurt. But I just think that he's a brilliant guy to listen to, and I really enjoyed listening to him on that episode, and I was getting very, very frustrated by it. So a couple shout out tweets that we saw. Brian Evanson: how can NBC Golf Channel give Fitzpatrick credit for being a Northwestern guy on their college leaderboard? He was there for a fall semester. that just made me laugh. And then
I made a joke today on Twitter. It was like, is it possible that Bryson played rounds longer than Fitzgerald was at Northwestern? Like, this connection that he has to Northwestern, I admire it. Like, you, maybe that was what you felt was really like great for you in your time in your life. But like, that I always tease one of my friends who's a golf writer for the Chicago Tribune about how he like covers Matthew Fitzpatrick like a local. Like, what? Like, who in Chicago was like, oh, I feel really connected to Matthew Fitzpatrick?
And then Tom Hobbs said, I actually bookmarked this one. Do you still think the U.S. will dominate the Ryder Cup in the coming years? So that was just picking. That was picking one of the many buttes we got. So
they'll dominate it in America. They're going to dominate in Whistling Straits when there's, you know, they're able to, I don't know, put the rough all the way out in the ocean.
I think it might be time to pump the brakes a bit on the Cam Champ for Ryder Cup captaincy.
Yeah.
That was ugly. So
he flew a little bit close to the sun.
Yep. All right, KBV, thanks for joining on a Sunday night. And we always appreciate your insights. And thanks for making me laugh so hard. I sweated a little bit earlier.
Well, if there's the sub air that's willing to clean up your sweat, your belly sweat.
Ending it on that. KBV, thanks as always, man. Cheers.
Cheers, bud.
Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything.